pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Thursday morning, 251-343-0106. You want to be in touch with the show, all you got to do is text me. I'll be around to respond. Just keep them PG if you can. Anyway, you'll get in touch with the show. That's how you do so. Coming up on the program, Paul DeMarco will be with us. He's regular on this program. We'll hear from him in about a half hour. Bradley J. in the 10 o'clock hour, my colleague at Breitbart News. And then in the 11 o'clock hour, we moved her back an hour, but because you never can have enough April Marie Fogle on FM Talk 106.5. But April Marie will join us in the 11 o'clock hour, so make sure that you stick around for that. Well, here we are in the news. A couple of days removed from the August 11th Republican primary, now that we know the complete and total ballot for the general election in November. Democrat Clyde Jones calling Congressman Carl cowardly for refusing to debate. In a perfect world, yes, they would debate. Now, none of you are making your decision, making your mind up based on a debate. Then you're like, well, I want to hear their policy views, and each one has to respond to a question, and we'll see how they do, and then I'll make my choice. No one does that. Maybe it's like a rite of passage thing. You got to show that you can participate in a debate or whatever to show that you're prepared for the job. But and tell you something, Jerry Carl can participate in 20 debates or zero debates, negative five debates. I don't know. Name your number, and he's still going to win. I think it's up to the candidate, that's the challenger, to show some kind of credibility, that you're not just running a vanity campaign, that you're not just get some numbers in the polls. Now, to his credit, Congressman Carl, he was at a lot of these forums and debates over the years. A couple of those I moderated over the years. Going back to his county commission days, his first ever debate. So just because he's not going to debate you doesn't make him a coward. But, a lot of you got to text me like, well, they should be required to debate. No, they shouldn't. Their only requirement is to get more votes than the other guy. That's the name of this game. It's the name of the game is to win. It's just like saying Alabama and Auburn should have to play Notre Dame every year. So, I mean, in the end, it's who gets the most votes and who is elected. There should be no requirement. We're not running for student president here. This has always bothered me every time this happens. One of the candidates just dismisses the debate. This was true with Kay Ivey. And you know that I am not a Governor Ivey, biggest proponent in the world. Some things okay, but most of the time she's MIA. She didn't debate. And we were supposed to be upset, but it's just like, well, why are we getting upset? This doesn't matter. She's going to win. She's a coward. Well, you know what? She's going to be a coward who gets elected. This is not, like I said, this comes up every election cycle. Somebody's like, I'm not debating that guy. There's no obligation there. You just don't vote for the person. They don't want to debate. You don't like it. Don't vote for them. There, it's that simple. Let me know how that goes for you. 251-343-0106. What, Caroline Leavitt stepping down from the White House press secretary role. Who will be the next White House press secretary? There's a lot of that's the Washington story. Like that, you want to go to the cocktail parties and the bars and the, you know, whatever the social circuit is up there. That's what people are talking about, which is kind of divorced from reality. But we'll keep an eye on it. I have no insight into this. I thought Leavitt was a pretty decent press secretary, but I think being a mom, and I get it. That job is a pressure job. I mean, you're always on around the clock. And you can imagine working for President Trump. It literally is around the clock because he doesn't sleep. At least not at normal hours. But it'll be interesting. There's probably people lined up. It probably won't be Anthony Scaramucci, but there'll be some others in the running here. And will it be a big splash? Who would be a good press secretary? So you got to deal with these. The White House press corps is a fickle group of just, they're not entry-level journalists. They're kind of mid-level because that's a job. And I've known a bunch of them over the years who've worked at Beat. And that really is, that's another one of these jobs where you're always on. Because you have to follow the president around. A lot of times you're just kind of stationed there and on the north lawn there or whatever it is. And, you know, if you ever spent time in D.C. and you go over there where the White House is, you'll see the tents and the TV trucks. But they, you know, they're always having to do a live shot. Or, you know, the president's, there's always something going on. And if you're on TV, you're working around the clock generally. You're always in your makeup. You're always in your dress clothes. There's very little downtime. And sometimes, you know, on the weekends, they'll have someone else come in and do it. But, man, when they get in front and they get in that briefing room and they're all important and they're all taking their shots at the press secretary, they're all asking very, you know, leading questions. Why is Trump such an awful person? You know, like, okay. But then, like, you get Obama up there. What is it about the presidency that has enchanted you walking around the White House, you know? They're all trying to make a name for themselves. They're all trying to be next Caitlin Collins and get a primetime show. Become a star. Jake Tapper. He used to be like a real, like, reliable journalist at ABC. Then he got the CNN. He got CNN-ified. But it happens. You get in that culture and it changes people. And you know, CNN, I don't know what they do or how they do it or how they pull it off. People I've known over the years go work there and they like completely change their political stripes. Maybe it's like a Stockholm Syndrome thing. I guess same thing you could say about MS Now, Joe Scarborough. But working for a White House press secretary, that's kind of interesting to me just because it's not so much interesting that we're going to hear from this person for the next couple of years, but it's more interesting in the sense that Trump will he make a big splash? Will he find somebody that is right out of the gate adversarial with the media? Is that, you know, sort of the brand. He likes that back and forth. It's good for ratings, especially if the person is very good at it very good at like debating. We like that. We like it when in this audience, most of us, mommy issues probably not so much, but when a Trump official takes on some know-it-all, Ivy League educated C student, journalism student who wants to like make a big name for themselves and makes them look bad. That's what we voted for. These elitists. Taking on the elitist who vote, 90% Democrat, based on some polling, who operate in a world of conventional wisdom that's not really in tune with reality. So, you know, that'll be interesting. And maybe we'll start getting more White House press briefings, and that's what we love, the car wreck scene. Let's see what else I got on the list here. Alabama Power in this property dispute, and John Rich has gotten involved. He was on my friend Leland Whaley's radio show up in Birmingham yesterday. Essentially, they want to right away some transmission lines in Shelby County. And they're just kind of going about it with no like public relations response. And this one landowner is fighting back. This is another one of these David versus Goliath things. Generally speaking, over the years, Alabama Power has gotten its way. But sometimes Southern Company, you know, this new Southern Company is trying to get out of this, like, hyper-political game. If they engage here, they try to figure out a workaround. But there's a lot of this going on with the solar farms, the data centers. The not in my backyard populism, and it's not really ideological at all. It's kind of moving beyond those lines. It's not like a right versus left thing at all, but it's very engaging for the public. And they see this, and it's the little guy getting trampled on by the big guy. And that's just in our politics right now. That is the fight. And this comes at a time that's very interesting. We have our own little Alabama situation here. The big mule taking on the guy that doesn't want, you know, these power lines on this property. And we'll see who prevails. Seems like public sentiment is kind of lined up behind the property owner. And their whole idea is, oh, you're just bulking up your infrastructure for these data centers. Maybe that's true. I don't know the ins and outs of this, but I am interested now. You have a guy who's technically a Trump administration official intervening here with John Rich. Now, what his qualifications are other than being a country music singer, songwriter, I don't know. Text line, once again, 251-343-0106. We'll get to those in just a moment. Stick around. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. In your coal miner, let me thank you for your time. You work a 40-hour week for a living. Just to send it on down the line. This is for the one who drives the big rig.
First thing I remember knowing was a lonesome whistle blowing and a youngin's dream of growing up to ride.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Thursday morning. 251-343-0106 would be in touch with the program. All you got to do is text me and we'll respond to whatever it is that is on your mind. Ultra Runner, should leaders want to debate? Should they relish the opportunity? Why would a capable leader pass the opportunity to expose flaws in the opposition to a 50-50 crowd instead of just talking in the usual echo chamber? Because the point is to win the election. Now, you know, like I said, I don't think in this AL1 case, I don't think it matters. When you have a big lead, though, and the other candidate is just not a serious candidate, I think you got to earn the right to debate. Let me put it this way. Like, you got to show that you have support, that you could raise money, that you could that you're a viable opponent. And some of these guys, they fill out a qualifying form, and they just be like Kim McFeeters or whoever, and their whole point is just to be a wrecking ball. Like, are they seriously running for governor? Are they seriously running for Congress? Are they running with the actual effort here required that you know, you got to do all the things, check all the boxes, go kiss all the rings? Is it a serious campaign? So if you're not running a serious campaign, why should anyone take you seriously? Like, I think you have to, like, show that you better debate me or you could lose this race, instead of, hey, you owe me a debate because I qualified and I'm on the ballot. It's a sense of entitlement. That's what this is. That because I am the Democrat nominee, I'm entitled to a debate. And I just reject that. You got to earn it. You got to show that, you know, you have enough support that it's in your best interest to debate me. And we act like our two-party system, well, that's just the way we do it. We have to be fair to Democrats and fair to Republicans, but we don't. We don't live in a 50-50 society. At least not in Mobile, Alabama, in this market. And I would say that about, you know, a Democrat candidate. You don't owe your opponent a debate. But it's just, that's what the turnoff is. And I'm entitled to a debate because I am the nominee for the other party. But the other party is not a serious party right now. Not in most places. In some precincts and districts, yes. But not in the first congressional district. The ideas that your party represents are just wholly rejected by like a 60-30, 60-35, you know, somewhere in there. I don't know. It's not, in some cases, like where I live, it's like 80-20. But you're not entitled to a debate. We can think, but you should. Butter and I says the voters are entitled to a debate, not the candidates. No, you're not. We have voter participation that was 5%. You're not entitled to anything. You're not entitled. The whole idea of this entitlement thing ought to bother you if you're a conservative. If the two United States senators both want to run for governor, the voters are entitled to debate. No, they're not. You're not entitled to anything, Butter Knife. Your sole entitlement is the ability to go out and vote. You make your decision. If the other candidate doesn't want to debate, don't vote for him. We don't live in that kind of society. Just don't vote for it. But I think you've got to earn it. Jason Race, good morning, Jeff. Looks like Stephen Chung is the early favorite to replace Levin. That could be entertaining. Rebecca asks, what is your opinion of Laura Ingraham for press secretary? Ooh, she's my knowledge of Laura Ingraham is that she's very hard to work for. I don't think she gives up her lucrative Fox News contract to go be a White House press secretary. It doesn't pay quite as much as a primetime Fox News show. Most people go to be a White House press secretary to get the show. Don't leave the show to go be it. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. So if I get stoned, I'm just carrying on an old family.
they say can be done. We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound just like a bandit run.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show with FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Thursday morning, 251-343-0106. You need to be in touch with me, your show host. All you got to do is text me. I'll do my best to respond to whatever it is that might be on your mind. So to come on the program, Bradley J., my colleague at Breitbart News, in about an hour. And then in the 11 o'clock hour, April Murray Fogle, one of our Thursday regular, joining us now on the line. Speaking of regulars, always a pleasure to bring him on. Paul DeMarco joins us on the line. Paul, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. Hope everybody is well today.
Hey, yeah. Thanks for coming on. August 11th, primaries, no surprises there. I guess the Rhett Marcus vote tally, maybe just a little too close for comfort to that 50% mark to make me feel really, really good about November, but he's still the favorite. How was it up your way?
Yeah, I mean, it's low voter turnout. Obviously, this the 7th district, a lot of folks are obviously watching there. But really, look, people are already looking ahead. Are Republicans in the legislature next year going to redistrict and change to the 7 districts and follow suit like in Tennessee and what's going on in Florida? So I think, candidly, that's what I hear people talking about. They're kind of looking ahead.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. We're already kind of like picturing how our focus has moved on to more national politics, if you will, which is interesting. I still think it's a Democrat, cycle. But in the short term, the Democrats are going to do well. In the long term, they got a nightmare scenario. They're destined for a civil war.
Look, it's happening nationally, but Republicans are going to be smart to talk about up and down the ballot as we talk about all these offices, and I'm sure you'll hear about it in the gubernatorial race. What do you think about the Senate candidate in Michigan and the mayor of New York? I mean, yes, we need to, and it's very important to talk about the criminal justice system in Alabama and infrastructure. But those issues are invariably going to come up as well.
Well, in Alabama, I don't think that Tommy Tuberville is going to be the end-all, be-all savior that a lot of people think he is. But he's going to be a good improvement from what we got now on some of these criminal justice issues for sure.
Oh, no question about it. When it comes to, appointments to the parole board, when it comes to the infrastructure and Alabama Department of Transportation and the prison system. And he's already saying, I'm going to look at these with a fresh eye, a different eye. And I think it'll be welcome.
Yeah, I agree. And some of the personnel, I mean, maybe we get back to some of the personnel that we think is acceptable. I mean, that's just it right now. And it's unfortunate that it's like, well, we just have to wait out this governor for things to get better.
I think what's going to be interesting, I know he's already assembled a team to start looking at everything, is, I mean, some of these are decades old issues. You and I have talked about it when it comes to prison system and infrastructure, but you don't have to just start from scratch. You can see what's successful in other states and say, okay, you're doing it well there. Let's implement some of those same issues. You can look to a Florida, what Ron DeSantis has done. You can look at some of these other states, how they've been successful in some of their issues, and say, okay, let's see how they're doing it, and let's use that blueprint for success here in Alabama.
Yeah, and when you talk to guys you think are going to be part of this with Tommy Tuberville, that's what they say. That a coach says it himself. Like, look, I talked to these other states, these other, there's some U.S. senators who were once governors as well. And we're going to start looking at other states to see what they do. Because there seems to be just this, this endless cycle. This is just the way we do it in Alabama. This is the same people. This is the prison guy. He's been the prison guy forever. Well, clearly that's not working. But we got to, break this cycle of this is just how we always have done it.
Well, look at education, and we have made some progress because of the amount of the money that's been put in. However, just look at our neighboring state of Mississippi. I mean, I was looking at the rankings the other day, and Alabama you know, is still, we're not at 50th, but we're still, I think, in the last 10. And Mississippi is made just all types of progress when it comes to scholastic achievement. And that, you know, right there in Mississippi, and you give, you know, Governor Tate Reeves success for that. So you don't have to go far. You don't have to go to, you know, out west or the, you know, the Midwest to look for successful blueprints. What are they doing in Mississippi that has made such a tremendous amount of success in a lot of rural school systems, poverty-stricken school systems, to get the scholastic achievement that they're getting? So there are all kinds of examples that right out the bat that Governor Tuberville can take and say, you know, here's what we're going to do for infrastructure. Here's what we're going to do for criminal justice system. Here's what we're going to do for education. Here's what we're going to do for economic development. He can take some of those successes on some of the successes we have had in education, economic development, and take those and move forward.
Well, and I, you know, we spend a lot of time, you and I, talking about the criminal justice, prisons, and law enforcement. There's just some of the agencies in this state you feel like that when the day Governor Ivey walks out the door are just going to need wholesale reforms, just everything. And you know, you look at for example, like DHR and the problems there, and it's just they're veterans, even though it's changed. They just seem to be mired in this stagnant, you know, kind of government malaise. And I think Tuberville will do his best to change it. But some of these people are kind of entrenched. They are used to doing it a certain way. And there's going to be a lot of hurt feelings, I feel like, come January.
There will be. But, you know, he himself has said, we're going to ask for a forensic audit. And some of these agencies and some of these some of what's going on in the state. And so, I mean, he is saying he's going to do it. And I have complete confidence when he says he's going to ask to look at the books on a lot of issues across the state. I'm confident that he will do it. And it needs to be done.
It's got to. I mean, you know, we talk about prisons and how the cost just doubling. What went wrong there? And you know, it's not enough to hear, well, inflation or whatever. I just don't buy that. We didn't have 100% inflation in this country. We had high inflation, but not quite to that magnitude. Like, something went wrong. Did they lowball it? You know, did this idea that we could take this lease build plan and apply it to another, you know, another plot of land and do it, you know, that at least give us a better explanation than what I feel like we're getting right now.
Well, you know, what you're talking about is when the first prison that I think supposed to leave in October went from, was it $600 million to $1.3 billion?
Right.
There are legitimate questions that should be asked by everybody. And look, you've got legislators asking the question, but a new governor coming in asking the question as well is appropriate and should be done.
Well, it's just the way the lawmakers sort of greenlit it, though. This prison authority, that we had the budget chairman on it, and it just was in a dark of night almost that, hey, this is going to be a little more than $630 million. It's probably going to be like $1 billion. And you just, okay, well, sounds good to us. Here you go. And they rubber stamp it. And I just always thought that was, like, you know, a little too easy for them to do without really, you know, sure, you ask them about it and say, yeah, I'm upset, I'm mad as hell about it. But it seemed like there was not quite the necessary explanation given there.
And one of the problems is, you know, you've got the, you know, this Department of Justice litigation. And part of, you know, like, hey, we're solving this by building new prisons. So you've got that pressure going on. You can't just stop building the prisons because that was part of the issue. Now, I know this, I don't know where, and maybe you do, this talk about we're going to build these new prisons and shut some of these old prisons down. I mean, that is a non-starter there. You can't do that considering there's not enough beds, new beds, to handle the current population and future population as well. So that's going to be one of the issues that a Governor Tuberville will have to address as well. Just the entire system, not just these two new prisons that are supposed to come online, but what do you do and how do you make these the older prisons work as well?
Yeah, and Paul, you know, you and I were talking the day of that special session on the phone. Now, we were, I think, probably distracted by they had to do a compromise, remember, and they were going to do some early release parole things that to kind of grease the tracks to get this thing through the legislature during that special session. But if you recall, it was like we have to do it this way because time is of the essence. And we got to get these prisons up or we're going to be found in violation of the Eighth Amendment. The feds are coming for us. They're going to get us. And we're going to do this. We're going to build it this way with this construction management program. And we got to do what? Well, we just bid it. We don't have time for that. And here we are. We are, what, 6 years later or 5 years later, there's still delays in getting this thing open.
And we still have the issues that, you know, folks come after us about this, about the prison system, this about the prison system. But we all have to realize, I mean, what is the alternative? We have to have a prison system. You know, what I'm worried about is more than just do we have to have a prison system. What's going on in some of our courts where, you know, you can read every week about somebody murdered somebody and then they get a split sentence to serve 20 years and they only have to serve, you know, time served or this or that. I mean, that is as much an addition to the prison system. How are we going to fix that as well? So there are a lot of issues that have to be addressed by the governor and the legislature come 2027.
Yeah. And so it's just like and you and I have talked about this at length, there's a lot of landmines this new Tuberville administration is going to have to navigate that are going to be left behind by the current governor. And we don't even know where to start. I think we're going to be surprised early part of next year. Wow, this is going on this whole time?
Well, some of this is just decades of failures in the criminal justice system that go beyond any administration. And the legislature, I was there, we tried to fix some of these issues with the criminal justice system, but we really, you know, we talk about truth and sentencing, but it really is an issue. Again, every day you read about some of the plea deals and sentences that are putting violent felons back on the street. You know, thank goodness we did get the public voted on and approved the constitutional amendment for Anaya's law and credit for the legislature for fixing that. But we've got way too many problems right now that we see daily. It's not like, oh, you see this terrible situation that came up last month. No, it's like on a weekly and daily basis, you see failures in our system that put crime victims last.
Well, the other thing I think we're going to see going into the next administration, talk about public safety and some of these cities, including Montgomery, to some degree Birmingham, to start getting the job done. I do think that you're going to see a more proactive governor willing to hurt some feelings in these municipalities, these big municipalities that aren't keeping their people safe.
He's got to look at it. At what point do you say enough is enough? I mean, the outrage on you see on some of these cases, on some of what has occurred, some of the deals is just, you're like, this is what happens in, you read these headlines in like an Illinois or a California, but it's happening here in Alabama as well. And that's why he's going to have to step in along, like you said, and I would say just I-65 corridor, but I've seen it outside as well. And some of the sentences and plea deals and going to have to sit down with all the stakeholders in the criminal justice system, say enough is enough.
Well, one,
the
I think
citizens of the state come first.
One thing I think they got to do, and they fell short of it in this last session, was Senator Barfoot trying to mandate a minimum, you know, police staffing, not only impacted two cities, Huntsville and Montgomery, but I think in general, if you know, you're going to have to figure out a way to staff your police department. And if we're going to expect the state to come in and bolster and help you, then those are the consequences. If the whole entire state of Alabama has to make sure the people in Montgomery are being safe, then they're going to have to give something back in return.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, we talk about home rule, but if it's going to fall back on the rest of the state, there's got to be some accountability. I mean, you know, the state has done that in the past when, you know, Jefferson County was talking about the bankruptcy and this and that. So, I mean, we've been through that on different parts of the state, but there's got to be accountability when it comes to public safety. I mean, what is more important than public safety when it comes to government? I mean, right? I mean, isn't that, if you can't do that, what else can you do?
Yeah, everything else kind of falls by the wayside. If you just kind of look at the state and what you expect out of state government, so much of it is education, and even that is but just keeping people safe in general. And I don't think that the entirety of government, you know, at the local level really is doing the best job it could.
If local and county, I mean, public safety, that's where it makes decisions on where people live, is public safety. And so if your local community is not getting it right and not funding the public safety to the level they need to be doing, it raises questions. And if it ends up raising questions at the state level, so be it.
Paul, we got to get out of here. We're out of time. Folks want to find you online. Where can they look?
On X at Paul_DeMarco.
Paul, we appreciate it. We'll talk again soon, man.
Thank you. Take care.
Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Everything that I got. Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning, 251-343-0106. If you need to be in touch with the program, all you got to do is text me. We'll get to some of these texts that are outstanding here. Mike, I'm guessing Carl's Democrat challenger, considers himself a master debater and thinks it will give him a leg up on old Jerry. I think the debates have become pointless with how dumbed down the voting public is. It's just... the problem with these debates, and like I said, I'm happy to discuss them, have them, even moderate them in some cases, but like, who's really watching this? What percentage of the voting public, more or less, what percentage of the total public is acknowledging these things exist? And then who is making their mind up based on the debates? Are you just making your mind up based on a willingness to debate, or what is actually said in the debates? Because I feel like we know generally where these candidates are and what they're for and what they're against. In the case of Congressman Carl, I mean, we have him on like every other week to talk about what's going on in the world and what he thinks of it. Well, what exactly are you wanting to get out of a debate? Well, what is the objective? What is the prize? What is, you know, just tell me, like, and I mean, I mean this, like, okay, so you have a debate. What are you going to take away from it? Or is it just, okay, we're willing to do a debate, and by virtue of doing the debate, that's good enough for me because it shows courage. All right. Scrollverine says, no pressure, secretary lasts a full term. As much as I like seeing Alina Haba, maybe a man should take the job again. See here, unnamed texter says, the lady is tired of lying to the people. Caroline Levitt got tired of lying to America. Troy fan, hey, Jeff, you exercise a good quasi-gay feminine soy boy voice. Impressive. Is that what that was? The people who are like screaming about debates? That's how I hear them in my head. So maybe I don't need to be so good at that. DI Texter, Jerry Curl. You're so funny, DI Texter. Doesn't want to make a fool of himself like he did against Barrymore and Daphne. I was there. It was brutal. I moderated it. Yeah, that was not his best debate. But I don't think... A debate with Clyde Jones is going to change anything. Sorry. Just I don't buy it. They're just totally different. Anyway, more of your texts on the way if you want to try. 251-343-0106. Try to convince me that these debates matter and that for whatever reason, Jerry Carl not debating is going to change anybody's vote or any outcome. We'll be right back to FM Talk 106.5.